Today, we're going to talk about an issue that is rarely ever discussed, and that is the issue of mental health and suicide. And as we'll see, it is certainly one of those issues that we need to address because, as I've mentioned before, Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, who I've known for some time as well and known his father even longer, actually has put together these Christian Thinker Society events. And what he does is hand out cards like we do here. You can still do the Ask Kirby. Next week I'll try to answer some of the questions that are now collecting on questions you're asking. But then sometimes people won't even write it on a card, so he allows them to text it to some particular location. And he has found, interestingly enough, that over that, there one which was so very significant was this issue of mental illness and suicide. So if everybody's ready, let's have a chance to hear what he has to say about this particular issue.
Out of 4,000 questions we've received at Christian Thinker Society, people are always shocked to hear what the number one most asked question is. Can you make any guesses? The number one question that we've been asked are issues around suicide and mental illness. That's right, suicide. I think it's the most asked question because it's so rarely addressed. I mean, think about it. When was the last time that you personally heard a sermon series on mental illness or suicide? And yet Christian psychiatrists will tell you that 48% of adults will have a direct experience with mental illness themselves sometime during their lifetime. No one is immune from mental illness. Not even our pastors. Recent Lifeway research study found that 25% of our pastors are struggling with mental illness. Suicide, even among Christians, is an epidemic. Do you realize we are far more dangerous to ourselves than to others? More people kill themselves than kill one another each year. In fact, there are twice as many suicides as murders. Think about it. Our church families are incredible when someone gets physically sick or a family suffers from an accident or some kind of serious illness. Schedules are created where hurting people are never left alone. Meals are brought over. Pastors make visits. There are prayer chains, except when someone is suffering from a mental, psychological illness. We isolate people because we simply don't know what to do or say. As a church, we can do better. Statistics show us that nearly every family in your church is struggling with some type of mental illness. How do we respond? How do we intervene? How can we help? How do we even begin the conversation? How do we respond to the invisible diseases?
Let's, if we can, then focus on this for a few minutes. You have your handout, and we'll go through this. And EJ was so helpful to me to have a short series of announcements, because what I want to try to do is end early enough for you to ask questions. I recognize this is perhaps a little more controversial than some of the kinds of topics we address. I think very relevant, and I think he's already set the tone for that. So if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, we would certainly appreciate that. And EJ will come up here a little bit later and grab that microphone. Let's, if we can, though, first of all, focus on the subject of suicide itself. You know, and as we point out, people are oftentimes surprised to hear that that's the most asked question. But again, you have to think about, when have you heard a sermon, even here at Prestonwood, which does so much better job than the typical church addressing some issue like that? And so that is certainly the case. And see, he says, really, for every question he receives about the Bible, he receives three questions about mental illness. So it shows you it's on the forefront of everybody's mind, but nobody really wants to say much about it. And so that's why I really wanted to try to address that today. It's kind of the elephant in the room. And he even pointed out the fact that there are pastors that oftentimes are struggling with that as well. And if I can read from his book for just a moment, he said, while completing the final edits on this book, it saddened me to learn of yet another pastoral suicide. This time it hit hit close to home. Only a few miles from where I'm writing these paragraphs, well-known Texas pastor Phil Lineberger died by suicide on May 31st, 2015. For two decades, he had pastored the Sugarland Baptist Church. The Baptist News Global recounted excerpts from Lineberger's sermon 4 years earlier, which was delivered at his friend, Pastor John Petty, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church, who took his own life. And at that time, this individual who committed suicide 4 years later talked about his friend who had committed suicide then, said, "Depression speaks a language of its own, known only to those who are depressed. Depression is both ancient and universal. In fact, those who study it, doctors and psychiatrists, tell us that depression is the most common emotional problem in America. No one is immune to it. It is not a willful fault, nor is it a sin. The Bible says we see through a glass darkly. We don't know how dark the darkness is in someone who is depressed. Through the darkened glass, they can't see the light of life or the love of others. They can only feel the pressure of the darkness of despair in their own mind. The darkness is visible to them, but often invisible to us." Then he goes on to talk about their individual pastor, Robert McKeon. Here's an individual that graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary, one of our own that graduated there, who had committed suicide. In the book, it gives us quite a number of illustrations of indeed how that has taken place. You can get a sense of how this affects individuals maybe by looking at this message given, of all people, by our Vice President, Joe Biden. As you may know, a number of years ago, his wife and daughter were killed in a tragic accident. His wife now is his second wife. And he talked about the fact that in this speech, he said, "For the first time in my life, I understood how someone who'd consciously decide to commit suicide, not because they're nuts, because they'd been to the top of the mountain, and they just knew in their heart that they'd never get there again." Just again, a reminder of how painful this is. If you'd like to take some notes on the statistics, and again, as EJ points out, this is all on our website if you wanted to look later, but I thought just maybe pulling out four of those statistics, of which there are quite a number in the book, is just a reminder of what we're dealing with. When we talk about suicide, nearly 1 million people worldwide take their lives every year. As we just heard a minute ago, twice as many people take their own lives in suicide as take the lives of another individual. Suicide rates are higher, twice as high as the murder rate in America. One in five completed suicides involves a war veteran. And especially as we have more and more that have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, PTSD, such an incredible issue there as well. And then finally, suicide is the second leading cause of death among college students. Think of college students. They have their whole life before them. They're having perhaps a fair amount of fun, and yet that is the second leading cause of suicide. And so we are talking about some really difficult issues. On the handout there, I gave you a couple of questions that we can ask. And one of those that comes up so often is, can a Christian complete suicide? And the answer, of course, is yes. And there are examples that we've just given you that illustrate that. A Christian can be chronically depressed and contemplate suicide, even complete it. And one of the things he says in the book is, just because a person has received Jesus Christ as their Savior does not eradicate their choice in behaviors, their hereditary traits, nor their biological, mental, and emotional states. And a lot of this has nothing to do with something they brought onto themselves. It has to do with some kind of chemical or mental imbalance that they find. But as we'll see, sometimes we have a different kind of mindset, one that says that if somebody is physically hurting, we are rarely instantaneously to come up with meals and all sorts of things. But if they're emotionally hurting because of sometimes the same physical issues, we don't see that somebody has failed if their insulin does not produce properly. But somehow we sometimes in the past have thought somebody failed if their serotonin does not produce properly. And so I think that's something to think about as well. You know, many Christians really wonder what happens to a follower who commits suicide, and this is certainly a question that has been controversial. As a matter of fact, if you remember back, there was a clergy malpractice lawsuit that was brought against John MacArthur at Grace Community Church. And the reason they brought that was because an individual in the congregation had committed suicide, and so they went back and found a tape where somebody asked this question, you know, if somebody commits suicide and they're a Christian, will they go to heaven? And so they use that to say that because he said yes, because he teaches eternal security, that they could bring a clergy malpractice lawsuit against him. Now, the problem with that was is the tape was recorded after the suicide had taken place. People were thinking about the individual in the church. So you couldn't really say that because he gave that answer, he caused the person to commit suicide. But eventually the case was thrown out on an appeal. But you recognize that this is a question that people obviously ask. And my argument would be, and I think the argument of Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, and even today we talked about eternal security, didn't we? Would certainly be that. Ephesians 1:13. In him you also trusted after you heard the word of truth, the gospel of your salvation, in whom also having believed, you were sealed. There's that key word. You were sealed in the Holy Spirit of promise. Now again, it's something that we would hope no one would do, but we recognize that many Christians sadly have. And I just gave you two examples, but if you're not familiar, there are Christian counselors that we know that have committed suicide. An individual that used to be on probe staff, she and her husband went and are at a church in Park Cities. Finally, the depression got so bad for her, she drove out to East Texas, purchased a gun in a gun shop, and in the parking lot killed herself. I mean, so we can recognize that there are Bible-believing Christians, individuals that I've known, in some cases individuals that have provided counseling for individuals who, because the depression was so great, they simply took their lives. So how do we think about this? Well, we recognize it's certainly a brain issue, but what are some other verses maybe that we can add to that? And if you're taking some notes, you might put some of those down, because 2 Corinthians 4:8, and I might warn you, Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, because he stuttered it offered, he says 2 Corinthians. So it's okay to say 2 Corinthians, okay? You know. So when you see that a little bit later, 2 Corinthians is okay, just as 2 Corinthians is. And I know there's a big controversy right now with the presidential candidate, but it's okay to say 2 Corinthians, okay? So 2 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians 4:8-9. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. And so this, I hope, can be an encouragement to individuals that are really struggling with some of the pain that they're feeling. And some people have said, what's worse, physical pain or emotional pain? And I've had some people say, I can more deal with the physical pain than I can with the emotional pain. And so that's very understandable. What did Jesus say, of course? Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And ultimately, of course, we wait until the return of Jesus before we can see that we'll have completely healed bodies. And so that is certainly, again, another book I would highly recommend is Randy Alcorn's book on heaven. It's another 500-page book, by the way. It'll take you a little while. But again, help you understand what the new heaven and the new earth might bring. There is a Christian blogger who I think put it this way when we talk about looking forward to the return of the Lord. He said, until the day Jesus returns, I will live in a body which does not function as God originally intended. My brain, which is a key, central, integral part of my body, will not function correctly. Chemicals will become unbalanced. Serotonin will not be properly absorbed. Norepinephrine will be unevenly distributed. Synapses won't fire correctly. My brain, just like every other part of my body, is prone to illness. And I think we recognize that some of us already have various physical ailments of one sort or another. And it's understandable that if that indeed happens to our body, our brain is what? Part of our bodies. Let me, as I finish off this section on suicide for just a minute, I'll look at a couple of verses which I put in your handout. But again, you can follow those along with me as well. First of all, the scriptures are very clear about the fact that we as believers need to make sure that we guard our heart. On the one hand, we recognize that a lot of the mental problems people have to do with something that's dysfunctional about the brain. But I'll be also well to understand that sometimes we cause some of those problems in our brain because we don't guard our heart. We should pay attention to what comes in our eye gate and what comes in our ear gate. when Randy was talking about, you know, don't watch the news, don't listen to the news, don't read the news. And I think, hey, that's what I do every day, unfortunately. So I do not recommend my reading list to you, okay? Because it can really get you discouraged and depressed. And what you pay attention to and what you fill your brain with, and certainly unresolved conflicts, stress, unforgiving spirit. There are things that we can do to ourselves. So we recognize that some of what happens in terms of mental illness is biological, certainly outside of our control. But some of it, what we do, is emotional and volitional, and we bring it upon ourselves. And so certainly Proverbs 4:23 talks about guarding your heart. Be careful what you put into it. Romans 12, for example, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what is God's will, his good, pleasing, and perfect will, is certainly another key verse. And one last one, 2 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians 10:5, we demolish arguments and every pretension or prevention that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Some of your translations, if you have New American Standard, talks about strongholds. We're tearing down strongholds and lofty thoughts raised up against the knowledge of God and taking every thought captive. Either way is a good way to look at some of those particular issues. So that's the first category there, and that is the issue of suicide. Let's, if we can, now look at this issue of mental illness. And here we see that, again, one of the greatest causes of disability in America today is depression. Look at those statistics for just a minute. We have mental illness and then we have serious mental illness. So this is kind of like a smaller circle. If you look at serious mental illness, these are called SMIs, we recognize that last year, 9.6 million adults had what we would call serious mental illness. I'll come back to that in just a minute. But that's the smaller circle. The broader circle of people that had some kind of mental illness, 43.7 million adults. And those numbers come from the Centers for Disease Control. Add to that what you just heard him say a few minutes ago, that sometime in a person's lifetime, 48%, that's almost half. That means, okay, everybody on this side has a mental illness, or if you want to, everybody on this side. I mean, you can just begin to realize we are talking about, most of us are going to be dealing with this in some way or another, which is why I think it's important that today, at least, we talk about it and make this a place where we can have an opportunity to consider that. Now, when we look at serious mental illness, 1 in 20 have that, and that's where we're talking about bipolar depression. We're talking about schizophrenia, PTSD, or chronic depression. And those are in that category. And think about the large numbers that those are. Those are people inside our church. Those are people in our neighborhoods. They're people that you work with. They're people in your family. And certainly we need to have some understanding of that. Well, he mentioned the Lifeway study, and so I went from the book to Lifeway. And you can go to lifeway.org and find this. Lifeway is kind of the publishing arm of the Southern Baptist Convention. And here's just a couple of things. We can see, for example, that when they ask pastors, and these studies mostly were with Southern Baptist pastors, who, by the way, would be more orthodox and probably want to have a greater desire to relate Scripture to the world. So, because I'll tell you, some of the Methodist pastors, Episcopalian pastors, things like that, probably even less so. But even so, they found that 66% or two-thirds said that they never or rarely or maybe once a year address something about mental illness. So about two-thirds say they hardly ever talk about it. But then when they surveyed the people in the congregations, they found that two-thirds of them wanted them to say something about that. So we have this real significant disconnect between people in the pew saying, I'd like you to address this issue to help me understand what's going on. Now, again, we have a church that does address some of that. We have a special needs ministry. We have all sorts of things that allow us maybe more typically than the typical Southern Baptist church to address that. But look at those other statistics. 23% of pastors say they've experienced some kind of mental illness. So it's not like they've never had the experience. Some of them have. And frankly, if you're in the pastor for a long period of time, if you're not depressed, you probably don't have a pulse. I mean, there's certainly things in ministry that will certainly cause you to be depressed. 12% of pastors say they've received a diagnosis of a mental health condition. So you can see that this, again, is so easy to say, well, that's the problem of the world. No, it's a problem we need to address here within the church. There's some really good pieces in the book, which if you want to read more later, of course, you know, there's a lot of it online, are what are some attributes of healthy leaders? And so this was really intended for pastors, but, you know, all of us can benefit from that. There was about a dozen. I just picked out a few just to fill one screen. But one is to say no more often. It is interesting, but there are some very prominent pastors that sometimes speak every single year at Moody Bible Institute. They have a pastors' conference where they bring in all sorts of pastors. And it's been interesting because you've had some of them stand up there and say, you know, we as Christians, and especially Christian leaders, we pay attention to the spiritual gauge on our dashboard because we're supposed to be spiritual people. So, you know, maybe we're pretty good about prayer and Bible study. And sometimes we've learned over the years to pay attention to the other gauge on that dashboard, and that's the physical one. You know, we have to get enough sleep, we have to eat and everything. But most of us fail to realize there's another gauge up there, and it's an emotional one. And that is, you can just simply work so hard and so long that the tank is completely empty. And recently on my show, I had the pastor of Denton Bible Church, Tommy Nelson, on. And Tommy Nelson tells the story where he just never said no. And so, you know, he is mentoring all these kids, the young bucks and all the things he's doing. And he was teaching Bible studies Sunday night and Wednesday night and Sunday morning and doing all these things Friday morning and all this kind of stuff. And he said, finally, one day, Sunday night, I literally just could not get out of my chair and come and preach because he had just drained it all. And so learning to say no, very important. Take frequent short sabbaticals. Monitor the balance between your work and your personal life. Regularly assess your spiritual fitness. Okay, here's a good one. Do not make decisions when you're tired. If there's one thing I learned from the founder of Probe Ministries, lots of times they say, you know, we just need to sleep on this decision. It's amazing how the next morning when the blood sugar's up and you've got a chance to really think it through, sometimes you make a much better decision, right? Prioritize your physical health. That's eat nutritiously, physically active, get adequate sleep and rest. One of the things that is going to trigger anybody getting depressed is not getting their sleep. And so, again, you can see how important all of those are as well. Well, again, what are some verses in terms of response? A couple come to mind. Psalm 82 talks about the fact that we are to rescue the weak and the needy, deliver them from the hand of the wicked. Now, of course, that applies more to the battle that they were fighting there in the Old Testament, but I still understand that we have a responsibility to rescue those who are hurting in our congregations, in our Sunday school classes and other things. Acts 20, interesting enough, it says, in all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak. Remember the words of the Lord Jesus who said himself, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And perhaps the key verse is in Galatians, talking about the fact that we are to bear one another's burdens. And so that is certainly part of the accountability that I think we should have as believers, one to another. Then, as you can see in our handout, I want to keep this moving because I want to leave some time at the end for comments and questions. I want to get into this issue of the Church of the Invisible Diseases. We've looked a little bit at suicide. We've looked a little bit at mental health. Then finally, how do we kind of think this through? And as you can see, I've got three steps. A lot of this is in the video, but I'm going to save another video clip a little bit later. So we'll go through these fairly quickly. But nevertheless, the first one was the idea of stop the silence. When I looked at this, I thought this would be an important issue. When he has surveyed so many people in the Christian Thinkers Society conferences, and the number one asked question is on this, I always like to say that I try to bring messages here to the examine class that I've always wanted when I was sitting in a Sunday school class, you know, topics that sometimes we need to address, need to understand. And certainly one of those is this. And certainly he says that one of the number one problems in our churches today is related to the matters of health and mental disorders. Because after all, if indeed we accept those numbers, 1 in 4 suffer from mental illness. And so it's a very significant issue, because this invisible disease you can see in the brain can have the power to isolate you. That's a real concern. That's why we need one another to help one another. It gives you the possibility that it would cause you to be ceasing a productive member of society. And of course, we can also see, as we probably have figured out by now, it can shorten your lifespan. So it certainly seems to me that one of the things we should be willing to do is talk about this issue and address this issue. Oftentimes, what we see is that we fail to talk about that. And so if you're taking some notes, you might put down Mark chapter 2. I thought this was interesting because if you think about it, Jesus really worked to remove barriers. And of course, there's lots of barriers. We see sometimes there's barriers of race and ethnicity. Sometimes there's barriers of wealth and poverty. But one of the barriers is the barrier that is sometimes created by an individual who is depressed or dealing with some mental disorder, and they aren't likely to reach out, and more importantly, we're not likely to reach out as well. He tells a really sad story in here of when he first had a church pastorate, that this one couple came to join the church, and he asked a little bit more why they left the one church that he knew about and came to this church. It's because the pastor asked him to leave because one of the members of their family had a mental disorder. And if you think that's atypical, it's certainly not. And so again, just the need for us to remove those barriers. And what did Jesus say? When Jesus heard this, he told them, "Healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. I have come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are sinners." And I think, of course, that applies very much to, of course, the spiritual issue, but I think it also could be very easily applied to the emotional issue. So point number one is I think we need to, in a sense, stop the silence. Number two, this is kind of obvious, we need to stop the shame. As I pointed out, some people have been asked to leave a church because of their mental illness, but we don't really ever see an example of Jesus banishing someone because they were different. Of course, we see him instantaneously healing some individuals, not only of physical diseases, but think of the demoniac and others, sometimes of emotional and spiritual diseases as well. Now, there's some that, especially in the charismatic movement, and we've run into this quite often, that say, well, you just need to go forward, just pray, and if you have enough faith, you'll be healed. And you know what? That's one of the things he asks. Well, you know, does God heal? Yes. Have we seen situations where from the moment of conversion or the moment they walked an aisle, God healed them? Yes. I mean, I've run into some of those. I had Josh McDowell on just a week ago, and Josh McDowell talks about the moment his father, who was an alcoholic, became a Christian, he never touched alcohol again and never was tempted by that. I don't understand that because I know other alcoholics that have struggled with that their whole lives. I don't have an answer for that. You've heard Gary Frazier talk about the fact that his wife, Sandra, is cured of cancer. Well, I know other people that have died. Many of us are going to a funeral in about an hour or two that died of cancer. Do I have an answer for that? No, I don't. But I also recognize that in most cases, you know, even though God may save an individual, their physical ailments continue on. And if that's true about physical problems, I think it's also true about mental problems. And so that is the case. So first of all, stop the silence, stop the shame. Finally, then understand mental illness and be present. By now you might say, well, how are we defining mental illness? And the definition he uses, and I think the standard clinical definition is this. Mental illness is defined as a physical dysfunction of the brain that causes the inability to think or feel or act in a person's normal manner. Now that could be brought about by all sorts of things. He tells one story here of an individual because of juvenile diabetes went into depression because not only was the insulin not being produced effectively, some of the other chemicals in terms of the brain chemicals were. Strong, gifted Christian, but nevertheless struggling with depression. Other individuals, bipolar, schizophrenic, whatever. Others brought about because they've had an unforgiving spirit, because they've done some of that to themselves because of bad thoughts. And so all sorts of reasons for those can happen. But again, I like what he quotes there. He says, outside of a miracle, an individual does not get out of bed in the morning and speak away high cholesterol. Don't you wish we could do that? Okay. Similarly, one cannot pray away mental illness. So sometimes this is a lifelong challenge for an individual. If I can digress from a Christian presentation for a minute to go to a secular one, I don't know how many of you love TED Talks. I'm kind of a TED Talk addict. Well, Ruby Wax, in one of her TED Talks, said this, that all diseases, seemingly, we have compassion for, except those of the brain. So any other disease garners sympathy from us. And if it happens from here on down, boy, we're sympathetic. But if it happens from here on up, all of a sudden, we don't have that. So if that's what the secular world is saying, maybe what we should do is begin to say maybe the Christian church should be different in terms of that mindset. Our church families, as you said, are so helpful when somebody's physically sick. You know, we have so many of you in the room here that have given meals. We just go out of our way if somebody has any kind of need. But what about mental illnesses as well? Dr. Moorhead is a Christian psychologist, and he says that mental illness is nobody's fault. Mental illness is not a matter of choice or willpower. In other words, a lot of people that are struggling with this actually are struggling simply because of something that happened in their brain. Now, as I've also mentioned, some of those individuals may have done some things because of their unforgiving spirit, because of their anger, because of tremendous amount of stress in their life, and other things may have brought some of that on. But at the same time, most of what we're talking about, especially those SMIs, those serious mental illnesses, are due to some kind of misfunction of the brain. So we're doing pretty well on time, so I'm going to play a rather long clip here now on the healing equation. And we'll go back to some of the things that Dr. Jeremiah Johnston has said. Then I'll come back with some final comments and open up for questions. But let's see what he has to say in terms of how we should respond and develop what he calls the healing equation. Oops. Can somebody flip, put that back up there? I just hit one wrong button. Can you hit the play button on the top there? Sorry about that. Just hit play and then we're good. That's right there. Thank you. All right. And if I push
ways that we as a church community can be proactive and be part of the healing solution. Here's this healing equation. Number one, we need to admit every family struggles. We're all broken. We're all messed up. We need to reach out to one another and begin an honest conversation and dialogue. We need to change our thinking as a church community and get rid of the stigma. The second part of the equation is this. We need to make a commitment to love instead of judge, condemn, and misunderstand. I think one of the funny observations I learned very early on in my ministry is that Christians, they don't gossip. They just share prayer requests. One of the reasons that we do not discuss mental illnesses, these invisible diseases, is because in the church, people are afraid that they're going to be gossiped about, ostracized. We've lost our first love. John 13:35, by this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have a love for one another. The third part of the healing equation would be to build support groups for every age level in our church for addressing mental disorders. Mental illness does not separate people from the love of God, and so it shouldn't separate us from the church. The principle I learned from Anna was that one of the most helpful things in a recovery is in surrounding those who are struggling with positive, supportive people who discuss the mental illness, not ignoring its existence. Having that community is a major part of the treatment process. Which leads us finally to the fourth part of our equation. We can encourage the mentally ill in our church communities to serve. Most people struggling with a mental illness are extremely witty, well-humored, and highly intelligent. It is an often overlooked fact that some of the greatest Christians of all time have had lifelong struggles with depression, even thoughts of suicide, and struggled with all the invisible diseases. When my wife and I lived in Oxford, with the encouragement of my friend Michael, we traveled about an hour outside of Oxford near Milton Keynes to the little town known as Olney. Even though it's just a little speck on the map, Olney is a place we should have all heard of because it's right there in that location that John Newton, the local pastor, preparing for a Bible study on New Year's Day, the year 1773, wrote perhaps the most famous song of all time, Amazing Grace. What a Bible study that would have been to be part of. Amazing Grace was published a few years later in the now famous book known as The Olney Hymns. But many are not aware that that hymn book actually had a co-author, John Newton's dear friend, William Cowper. William Cowper himself wrote nearly 70 of the 300 or so hymns in the Olney Hymn Manual. You've no doubt sung William Cowper's hymns without even knowing it. You sung There Is a Fountain Filled with Blood, or another beloved Cowper hymn, Oh, for a Closer Walk with God. Aside from being John Newton's best friend, William Cowper is remembered as one of the great poets of the 18th century. Even Benjamin Franklin cherished Cowper's book of poems. A window at the great Westminster Abbey honors William Cowper. But did you know that Cowper struggled with paralyzing depression his entire life? He attempted suicide numerous times. His depression was chronic. Before meeting John Newton, Cowper spent years at St. Albans Insane Asylum before relocating to Olney, where he would meet his best friend, John Newton. The local pastor, John Newton, was there, and he decided to make a home visit on William Cowper, and they became friends. No, mental illness touches us all. We can learn from the example of John Newton, who rescued his friend by simply being there, supporting him, showing up, loving him in his mental illness, and then did what? Put him to work, told him to come write some hymns with him. I mean, can you imagine the wisdom in that? William Cowper is in despair. He's tried to kill himself numerous times. And his friend John Newton says, hey, let's write some hymns together. He got William Cowper serving. As we close this.
Again, I think you can see that. We'll close it on our own here. But just a couple other comments before we'll open up for some comments. You know, I think we can kind of learn from the example of John Newton. I don't know if you knew that story, but there, the story of John Newton and William Cowper. And, you know, our church is filled with William Coopers and people that are talented, but they're struggling with mental illness. And the idea here is to encourage them to serve. But it also, I think, reminds us that this invisible disease no longer needs to be invisible. And we need to talk about it, and we need to minister to those that are struggling with that.
Hey, let's give Kirby a hand. That was outstanding.